Hello again. Welcome to From Silence to Self-Respect. I'm Larry Pfaff, and this is The Deep Dive. Today I have Laura with me. Say hi, Laura.
Hi, everyone.
So our mission here is simple. We will review a chapter, maybe take some notes, and we pull out the key insights for you.
Trying to get to the heart of it.
Exactly. And today we're diving deep into my memoir, From Silence to Self-Respect.
Which, for those who might be new to it, is really your story of dealing with childhood trauma from alcohol and abuse, figuring out your identity and survival.
And healing.
Yeah.
A long road to healing. Today, Laura, we're focusing on chapter two, titled The Promotion.
The Promotion. Okay.
Yeah. And I want to start with something from that chapter, something that I lived with my entire childhood. A line from the chapter. Senior didn't raise his voice often, but when he did, the whole house felt it. His silence carried the same weight, and I remember being scared at that young age. From that point on, I would always doubt and second-guess myself.
That's heavy, especially feeling that as a kid.
Yeah, I was just over two when my twin sisters came home. I don't have a clear memory of the day, you know, like a calendar date, more like.
An intuition.
Yes, this feeling, the air in the house just changed. I can picture myself, tiny, standing at the top of the stairs, and my grandmother walks in the front door, and she's got a baby in each arm. Her face, she looked tired, but also like glowing, kind of holy, almost, like she was carrying something sacred, but really fragile. Wow. And my mother came in behind her with the care package from the hospital, you know? And Senior entered last, no expression, poker face. I couldn't read him, just blank. Yeah. And I didn't have the words for it then, obviously. I was too young, but I knew it. I felt it.
Felt what?
Instantly, that everything was different now. Just
wow.
Completely changed.
That image of you just knowing something profound shifted, even without language, that's powerful. What did that different feel like inside?
It was weird. I definitely wasn't the center of attention anymore. That was obvious. Sure, but the really strange part I felt. More important somehow, not less. It's hard to explain, like a quiet importance. Nobody sat me down and said, okay, here's your new job. Right, nobody had to. My heart just, I don't know, signed up for it. So I accepted the role. And it's funny because my mother, Senior, even other relatives, no one could tell the twins apart most of the time.
Really?
Yeah, they'd always try to figure out who was who, looking for tiny marks or whatever, like it was a puzzle.
But you knew.
I knew just like that I could look at them and know. And from then on, I was basically their shadow. I didn't need instructions. I just needed them.
So your entire focus shifted, and you found this, like you said, this new job, this purpose. What did that actually look like day to day for a toddler?
Well, you see it in old photos sometimes. I was always there, hands ready to catch them. Wow, eyes really wide, really serious. Too serious for a kid my age. Life didn't slow down, you know, with two new babies. It got faster.
It got faster. I can imagine. Chaos.
Yeah, bottles, diapers everywhere. My mother was stretched thin, just running back and forth. Senior was either working or home drinking, but quiet. In his chair, distant.
So you stepped into the gap.
I guess. I learned quick they needed me. My mother might call from another room, get a blanket, and I'd run, drag one out, try to fold it over them. Yeah. Something falls. I pick it up. One of them cries. I'm tucking them in, trying to soothe them.
Little you. Wow.
When a mess happened, I cleaned it fast.
Before anyone noticed.
Yes, before Senior would turn violent, that was the key. Nobody told me to do it. It just happened.
Spontaneously.
It's funny. Totally. And nobody ever said thanks either. But even then, I understood. I got the deal. That love wasn't free. Love was something you earned. By being useful.
Oh, wow. That's a huge understanding for someone so small.
Perhaps.
Heartbreaking, really, that love equals utility.
It shaped everything. Yeah. And nights were vigilant. I'd stand guard from my room, listening for Senior's car, the sound of it pulling in. If he came home, you know, in a bad mood, I'd worry so much about the twins, I would hope and pray they stayed quiet.
You,
yep.
A toddler, monitoring babies to manage an adult's mood.
I knew the stakes. It felt like I did anyway. Yeah. There was just no room for error. Like I said, he didn't yell often, but when he did, the whole house filled.
And?
Yeah. and the silence was just as heavy.
I felt it.
He could stop everything with a look. I didn't want them to get that look, so I would want to protect them. Trying to, from the tension, you know? Yeah. So, I learned their cues, every little cry, every rhythm. I did what they needed before they really fussed, and listened for his cues, too.
Two.
Oh, yeah, memorize them, yeah.
Yeah.
The sound of his boots walking up the steps, the exact way the door closed when he was slipping away, angry.
So you were constantly scanning the room in anticipation. Like, you became the emotional radar for the twins.
This is exactly it. I didn't have the term then, but yeah. Reading the room for danger constantly.
At barely 3 years old.
Barely three? And I already believed, truly believed, it was my job to keep the twins safe.
And that belief sticks around.
Oh, it stuck for a long time. Because you know, when love feels like holding the world together, you don't just put that down when you get older. You carry it until you can't.
Into every room.
Every single room.
Larry, hearing you tell that, it's so vivid, and you put so much into the book, but I always wonder, especially with something this personal, what didn't make it onto the page initially, or what was maybe harder to articulate then? Looking back at chapter 2 now, are there deeper layers or costs you see more clearly?
Yes, that's the tricky part, isn't it? Because putting words to some of this stuff is... Well, it's still emotionally difficult. Some chapters were more challenging than others.
I bet.
That house, it felt like it was just wired with emotional landmines everywhere.
You'll pay the price, yeah.
And the rules, they were all unspoken.
And?
Senior would say, do as I say, not as I do. So you just had to figure them out. And I learned really fast, love wasn't just given. It wasn't a birthright. I didn't even know what healthy love looked like, really.
So what did it look like?
Like a reward system. Something I had to earn, perform for. I got good at seeing what wasn't said. Fixing what stayed broken. Offering what was needed before anyone even asked.
Always anticipating.
Always. And this constant need to be useful, this wiring, it didn't just make me feel responsible. It convinced me deep down that if I didn't hold it all together, I wouldn't be worthy of love. Period.
Wow. That core belief... That's a foundation for so much else.
It really is. And that memory, the day the twins came home, it's not fuzzy. It's sharp. Like you said, it feels tattooed right into my nervous system.
Do you still feel it?
Yeah. Standing there, watching my grandmother walk in with those babies like Moses, I wrote, fragile commandments, her face lit but exhausted, celestial exhaustion maybe, and my body just got it. Then the shift, everything's changed, irreversibly. And I wasn't the center anymore, but somehow, more important, not loud important, but like this quiet pulse inside saying, I belong to them now, they belong to me.
That inner voice assigning you this role, not really a choice, more like an internal draft notice. How did that sense of duty start defining you in ways you maybe didn't even recognize back then?
Well, the roles we end up playing, right? Often they're the ones we never actually chose, but survival. Survival's like that.
Doesn't ask permission.
Nope. It just downloads itself into your core memory, runs in the background like default settings. My family? Mm-hmm. Maybe chaotic from the outside, but probably just normal dysfunctional, you know? And the thing about growing up like that, the need to protect just becomes automatic. Like breathing, you don't even think about it. Second nature. And like I said, life didn't slow down. It spun faster. Diapers, feedings, noise, lack of sleep. It's overwhelming for anyone. Mm-hmm. I just started absorbing it, quietly taking on the weight, picking up the pieces. If they cried, I moved. Something dropped, I grabbed it. If things felt tense, I tried to smooth it over before it blew up. Not for praise, not 'cause I was told to. But because I thought that's what love was. Deep down, yeah. I thought love was earned through doing, through usefulness, sacrifice, being the steady one when the adults weren't. That was me, 3 years old, with a job title nobody ever gave me.
You discuss in the book about the trap in that kind of thinking, that constant patching, that anticipatory care.
Yes.
What's the trap?
Yeah, the trap. See, the hardest thing about growing up in that kind of instability? You mistake your survival mechanisms for devotion. You think it's just who you are. You think it's love.
So it's survival disguised as love.
Exactly. It's survival wearing love as a costume. I put in the book, when you grow up patching what's broken, love starts to feel less like connection and more like a duty.
You were carrying a weight you were too small to hold.
Yeah, that weight. That love I learned. It wasn't light, it wasn't freeing. It was heavy. Loaded with responsibilities and expectations I didn't even consciously understand I was meeting. And that kind of love, man, it costs.
Yeah.
It costs more than it gives back eventually.
That cost, that sense of duty over connection, how did you see that play out later in your adult life? Because those patterns don't just vanish, right?
No, they definitely don't. When love feels like carrying the whole world as a kid, you don't just suddenly learn to put it down.
You keep carrying it.
You keep carrying it. I became the adult who says, sorry for needing to rest. Then I became resentful and angry, always at the wrong people. I felt like the one who overfunctions while everyone else kind of underperformed around me, the fixer, cleaning up messes that aren't mine. Yeah. Solving problems before they even fully form. Until the weight began to crush me, then I would push people away. I was the kind of person who ran toward other people's fires until the heat finally burned me, and then I would retreat behind closed doors, forgetting how to comfort myself.
Or maybe never learned.
Yes, never learned. I wasn't demoted, I got promoted. Protector, watcher, silent little warrior. And back then, that promotion felt like love. It really did.
And putting words to all that emotion
took forever. Seriously. A long, long time. And I still struggle with it sometimes. Being able to name the feeling, learning love that way, where it's all doing, doing, doing with your hands full, but your heart feeling kind of empty, that stuff sinks into your DNA.
It becomes part of your wiring.
Yeah. Teaches you love means doing, not being. And healing from that, that's about unlearning all that garbage.
How do you do that? What does unlearning look like? What was your process?
It's slow, painful sometimes. It looks like forcing myself to sit still when every nerve is screaming to jump in and fix something that isn't my problem. It forces me to relive the pain and emotion all over again, tears included.
Resisting the urge to fix.
Yeah, it looks like saying no sometimes when the old me would have automatically said yes, yes, just to keep the peace or feel needed. It's consciously trying to check in with my own heart as much as I used to check everyone else's, which I still continue to deny myself.
Turning the attention inward.
Trying to realize that the love I poured out back then, I deserve to receive some of that too. That little boy standing in the doorway, watching over his sisters, he needed holding too.
He still does.
He still does. Yeah, it's about learning to hold myself now. Just as tenderly.
That vulnerability, realizing you gave so much, but your own needs weren't met, that's a tough realization. This whole conversation, hearing your story unfold, it makes me think about unmet needs and maybe self-sacrifice that isn't always clear-cut.
Exactly. It brings up a question I've had to sit with, a question maybe you've sat with too in your own way. It's this. What would it look like to set down the roles you took on to survive even for a moment?
Wow.
Just something to think about. And next time we'll talk more about Chapter 3, The Boy at the Window, about how waiting for seniors' attention shaped my childhood, how being unseen taught me to equate endurance and usefulness with love. Laura, thanks again for sitting in and giving your insight.
Larry, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Until next time, remember this. We've walked through darkness, but we're still here, and being here means hope.